Hello, and welcome to Out of Oscar, a film and Oscar podcast where a special guest and myself focus on unsuccessful Best Picture contenders plus the Academy's nominees. Welcome back, Valentina, the third time on my podcast. How are you?
Third term is the best. So I mean, at least if we take it in Jessica Chastain options. So we're doing great in here.
And today we're having a smackdown of sorts for 2003. We'll be discussing the Best Picture winner, Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. We're not super fans, sorry in advance. Then we'll be moving on to our favorite film from that year's Best Picture lineup. And for both of us, that film is Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation. And in line with the theme here at Out of Oscar, we'll be discussing our Best Picture misser, Anthony Minghella's Cold Mountain. Minghella's film was nominated for Best Picture equivalents at the National Board of Review, Globes, Critics, Producers Guild of America Awards, and the BAFTAs, but missed out on a Best Picture nomination. I'll just quickly introduce Cold Mountain. So in the waning days of the American Civil War, a wounded soldier played by Jude Law embarks on a perilous journey back home to Cold Mountain, North Carolina, to reunite with his sweetheart, played by Nicole Kidman. Now, why did you choose Cold Mountain when we were discussing this episode a bit ago?
I think I always have like hot takes when discussing movies, but I think with Cold Mountain, I was, you know, we're always watching about Renée Zellweger, Oscar win, and etc., and I've been always a hater of Anthony Minghella. But at the same time, I really do not understand how much love the Oscars have for him. So when I watched it, was like, okay, it might be a good time maybe to try to be friends with Minghella. Didn't happen. Or actually to also understand which one of the two Oscar wins from Zellweger is better, because I didn't even remember it. And of course, it was a bad take, I have to admit it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't have the highest expectations going into this. I expected something like The English Patient. And if you are expecting that, you're going to be let down. It's nowhere near as spellbinding as that film is. And it doesn't really sweep you away like that one does. Instead, it kind of had me falling asleep. I'm a huge English Patient fan, by the way. I will defend that film. I know that people have a hard time with it, but I love The English Patient. I've never seen The Reader, but that's another topic.
No, and I also discovered that Minghella was one of the co-writers of Nine.
Oh, no.
So imagine, it's like, what? I really do not understand anything out of him, except for the fact that since that he likes like big productions, melodramatic. I don't know if I hate, but I'm not really passionate about English Patient. I feel like, well, not again, because I'm not exactly a hater, but I feel like Len Bannon's in Seinfeld when she was watching The English Patient. But maybe a little bit more with Cold Mountain. Because Jude Law is annoying. But he is.
But Cold Mountain, so you're saying, is the inferior film, to put words in your mouth.
Yes.
Okay.
I think, yes, of course. And I think the Oscars agree, so we're quite good in it.
Yeah, and it still received 7 nominations, which is, you know, just the power of Miramax. And it did win 1 for Renée Zellweger, which we'll get into, because that's definitely a performance. Between that and Judy, I mean, fair enough, she's on screen for longer and there's more substance to the character, but definitely prefer that win.
Yes, I think what happens is like she makes a construction out of this character about Ruby, something that, I mean, yes, she does, but she's of course like, she has to try to, I wouldn't say imitate, of course, but she tries to keep it real and faithful to what Judy Garland was. And in here it's like she has certain freedom, and at the same time it's like, especially with Renée back at the 2000s, she had this comedy gigs, and she can also keep it in here. So it's like, okay, for this kind of movie, she does a really good job. So it's like, what happened to me is that I think I haven't seen Cold Mountain like in 8 years. So after this rewatch, I discover how much I hate Anthony Minghella, but at the same time, how much I do not actually hate Rina as Wynn for this one. I do not hate neither one of both of her Oscars, but I think this one is much more disturbing, if I could say.
Yeah. So Zellweger plays Ruby Thews, who is brought into town or Black Cove to help Ada, Kidman's character. And it was funny because I was excited when she showed up on screen because I was starting to lose interest like rapidly. It was declining. And just the weirdness of the performance kind of had me hooked. She has that one defining moment, which became her Oscar clip, where she talks about how the soldiers will complain about the rain, but they're the ones who made the clouds, something like that. Layman's terms. I'm not saying it how she says it, but yeah, it's sort of a big moment of like desperation and but her character's just so like kooky in the first place. It's so hard to get a grasp on her. And she's doing something with her face, like she's really contorting her lips the entire movie. And that was like really distracting, as bad as that sounds.
Yes, I mean, what happened to me is that, I mean, she has this southern accent, I mean, naturally, and I think back at that time, I mean, she had like these two big roles before that, Bridget Jones and Roxy Hart, Chicago, and it's like how she could separate from them in order to do this, and of course, she had like this thing with Nicole Kidman trying to be pretty, but at the same time, like, the lady in danger, or the lady that is in love, something you could actually also relate from what happened with the English patient. And you had her, that it's like totally different, and at the same time, it's like you had Renee Zellweger that back in the day, and still today, I mean, she was like a really pretty actress, but at the same time, like, not like, I mean, she wasn't like the kind of actress like Nicole Kidman. That you had to put a lot of makeup in order to transform her to something different, but still she was like, oh, a little bit more delicate. And Zellweger was like, she was just rolling in there. But I had the same thing when the movie was like, the whole Jude Law Inman and Ava Story and blah blah blah, Nicole Kidman trying to remember, and the back and forward was really bad. And when Zellweger came in, was like, bang, I needed that. Even if the character is not the best. Because of course I think the script is not the best, but still was like I really needed that. So I mean, yeah, she has a lot of things, especially with her face. That's it. She's trying so hard to make a connection with the camera, but at the same time was like, I don't care. I needed that. I needed a refresh, something. That something that also happened with another, some of them characters, so with Natalie Portman, for example. But it was like,
Oh,
okay, I
yeah.
needed this one. This.
Forgot Natalie Portman was in this, but the thing with Zellweger, it feels like that manufactured Miramax supporting actress or supporting player nomination, where it feels just designed to get them a nomination. You're going to amp it up, you're going to play for the camera and have a character that is idiosyncratic if you're looking at like five nominees, which makes it easier for voters to end up voting for. It reminds me a little bit of like Judi Dench in Chocolat, the cantankerous kind of
Yes.
attitude. But then again, we're talking about the English Patient, Juliette Binoche, one supporting actress. That's a more grounded performance and one that's sort of anchors that film. Whereas I wonder how much different this film would be without Ruby. I mean, it would definitely be less interesting on top of how
It would be
uninterested it is, but.
so boring. I don't think Jude Law would have, and it's quite funny because Jude Law doesn't have any scene with Renee Zellweger with Ruby, but at the same time, I do not feel like he would have gotten the nomination if it wasn't for Zellweger. I mean, no, it's the same thing like what happened with Ralph Fiennes. If you feel, I mean, yes, English Patient was a much more liked movie, yeah, of course won Best Picture and blah 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 with Minghella, but I guess people were really, especially the Oscars and the producers, were expecting something really big out of this, and you have this lead actor, and because I didn't say the character, it's a lead actor that doesn't make anything, it doesn't, you couldn't say oh my god out of him, but with Zellweger is it's not a big character, and if you compare it to Juliette Binoche, Binoche was much of a, yes, I would say like a brown character, a character with much more structure. Something that with Ruby you don't get to see it because you don't end up understanding anything that happens. And again, it's not a problem. You don't something happened that also with the movie. It's like you watching and it's like, what's going on? Back and forward. The same thing with the memories out of The English Patient. But in here it's like, I'm not buying it. Even I don't know if there's something missing in the middle.
Well, for me, the reason why this whole movie doesn't work is because it so heavily relies on Ada longing for William and vice versa. The thing is, they're never really together for long enough in the beginning for you to have
No,
that
for you to
investment in
understand,
them
no.
or to even understand. And this is like
No.
bad, but they also have no chemistry. Like Kidman and Law are both beautiful
Zero.
people, but there's no chemistry between them whatsoever. And that beginning where they have that spark zips by so quickly, and then the film just drags from then on. And I just needed a little bit more in the beginning because it's like, oh, William, I miss
Yes.
you, dear. And it's like,
And
Ada, you
that's
met
it.
him one time. Take it
Maybe
down a
one
notch.
time. Yes, it's like keep it a little bit slow, you know, it's like Tinder for the 18th century. It's like there's something that you needed it out of it. And even the relationship between Ada and her father. It's like when you're the son, she's this rich bitch, for saying it some way, that has her whole life, like everything in her life, and suddenly then she's depressed, she's ruined, so and then you have Renee Zellweger in order just to put it everything together. It's like when you're little and you're like in this art class and they just give you a lot of things and you're like, okay, what do I do? What do I do? And just put it all together. Well, I think that's what happened with this one. It's like you don't understand. I think that's, yes, that's the problem with the script, because if I have to praise something out of Minghella, it's how beautifully shot it is. It's a beautifully shot movie, of course. He was somehow very, yes, and I think probably cinematography was really good, but it's like I need content, I need something, especially with this kind of scripts that are, yes, based on a book, but based on a war or something that actually happened. You need context, and it's like I understand the story, but why he left? Why she's so in love? She just saw it like 5 minutes. It's like. And also the chemistry. It's at the ending when they reconcile. I'm sorry for giving the spoiler of the ending, but it's like I was like, what's going on? I don't get it. And where's Ruby? It's like I need something. You don't know what happened. It's
Also, not a good sign if a character's death is like a relief for an audience member because every time a character would die, it was like, okay, let's make it a little bit more interesting. Like, let's bring up the stakes because right now we're at like
Yeah.
subpar, like -2 level.
No.
Yeah, but it's the sort
No.
of thing that, it's a headliner for Miramax's poster children, if you will. I mean, it's a chance for them to work together to bring in money because you've got Nicole Kim and Jude Law and Zellweger, who's just come from Chicago and Bridget Jones's Diary on the poster. It was released in 2003, December 2003. So I understand the appeal of making this a holiday film, like one where you can luxuriate in the length and like the cast. But from like a random afternoon perspective, 20 years later, it's just like this. I could get this. I've already had this experience and I've had it better, is what I'm trying to get at. Like, this film isn't offering me anything I haven't seen before. And a lot of the
No.
comparisons to, well, at the time, a lot of reviewers were drawing comparisons to Gone with the Wind. They're obviously both set in the Civil War with a Confederate perspective. But it's like, why are we doing this? There's no connection. Even if you want to get into
No.
the intrinsics of how the characters are written or whatnot, but it's just to me, this was a, forgive the pun, but a cold movie.
Yes, but as you were saying, they were all writing in one note, and it's like you try to do this romantic thing that, of course, it doesn't work. It's like it's not even memorable because if you think about again, comparing with the English patient, I do not have exactly big memories out of Ralph Fiennes and Kristin Scott Thomas, but still, it's like you can rely on them. You can see something that was real out of the movie. And also because of the context and what the movie it's writing. But in here, it's like there's something missing. I do not think. I'm gonna be a little bit mean, but what happens to me is that I don't often see Nicole Kidman having like this huge chemistry with her co-stars back in the 2000s because people would say Ewan McGregor. I would try, and in this year it's like the worst. And then you have Zellweger again that she's like writing in one note, but at the same time, it's the only one that actually tends to work because she has more screen time and she has more screen time with the lead one. But then you have Natalie Portman, and I think that if she would have gone like 5 extra minutes, she'd be at the same level as Zellweger. And then I found out there was also Cillian Murphy in there, and I was like, oh,
Yeah, for like two
minute closer.
seconds.
It's like you have so many people in that are like 2 seconds. You have like the potential for a cipher best ensemble cast, but at the same time, it's like, what do these characters bring to the story? I don't understand. You're trying like to make big progress out of the lead characters, and I just don't get it, especially Jude Law. It's like with Nicole Kidman, still she tries to do something. Jude Law is like you're trying to put so many things together in order to make him be credible in anything, and then yes, of course he got an Oscar nomination out of it, but still I don't understand. And also, if you think about it, it was I couldn't say a success, and I couldn't say that it was a failure because I think that the budget of the movies was like 80 million. And they only did in box office like 180 million. So it's like, I don't remember the numbers of the English Patient, and of course they're gonna be quite different, but thinking that the same year you have Lord of the Rings with 94 millions out of, I mean, it's a budget, yes, of course it's more, but still, it's like you have 94 millions for a movie that technically is spectacular, and you have this one that it's, I mean, it's okay, and also with a big budget, and you have like huge box office, major success in Lord of the Rings, and this one with 180 million. It's like, this is bad. And why is it bad? I would say Minghella, because I do know. And also, Sydney Pollack was the producer. And I read comparisons about the movie, yes, because I read, I think they used to work together, even the reader was, the final film for,
For
produced
Sydney
for both of
Pollack,
them because they died, yes, because they died in 2008. And I read somewhere people saying that people were comparing, okay, if Sydney Pollack is behind this and you have the English Patient director, what you're when you're gonna have something between out of five for again, the English Patient, major success, and once again, nope.
Yeah, well, more of the story. English Patient is a 5-star film for me, and Valentina is mixed on it.
No, but as I always have hot takes, and after recording or talking to you, then I'm like, oh, I had to revise my comments. The same happened with Penelope Cruz. So maybe tomorrow I'm gonna watch English Patient, and I'm gonna be like Peter Man in Seinfeld, just thinking it's a masterpiece. But but I had to admit that at a technical level, it's a really great movie for the 90s, The English Patient.
And
Not so good, Cold Mountain.
okay, for me, the reason why I love English Patient is Ralph Fiennes' performance and the mystery of it. Whereas Jude Law in Cold Mountain is really not working with much and not giving us much in return. And we've talked in length just then about Jude Law being the reason this film kind of loses any momentum and any emotion
Yes.
or heart or core. And I don't know, the
Maybe
nomination is perplexing.
I think it was it's I tried to think, and I mean, after rewatching, I tried to think what we need to change out of the movie. Maybe the cast. Yes, and I don't think I'm not because I try to be Aussie friendly. I do not think the main problem is Nicole Kidman. I do believe it's Jude Law, but at the same time, it's like Jude Law is doing whatever he always does. It's not something different. He tries to be this charming gentleman, and at a certain point, I think he tries to imitate Ralph Fiennes with that vibe of mystery or something,
Sure, yeah, he
and
does.
it's not working. Probably also the direction, the actor's direction, something like that. But again, it's like, no, I do not. I have heard the category back in the day. I don't think it was a strong category, but well, yeah, Champagne won. So, I'm not a hater of Mystic River, but I mean, Johnny Depp, Ben Kingsley. Well, you have Bill Murray, of course, but I do not think it was like a strong lineup.
Yeah, sure.
And also in supporting actress, even though I do like Renee Zellweger, I'm fine with it. But if you think about it, I mean, Patricia Clarkson in Pieces of April is, I mean, it's the kind of movie that I once watched because I like Sean Hayes, so imagine. Marcia Gay Harden, again, you're not gonna. Holly Hunter. And then you have, I do not know how to pronounce her name, the actress from House of Sand and Fog. She was mesmerizing. But of course, Zellweger was a big name back in the day. You had Miramax on her back, and she was like, she needed an Oscar. I mean, it was like, if she wasn't gonna be here, when it was gonna be.
Yeah, and it was almost like a makeup win for Roxy Hart, but also so many independent films in that supporting actress category, and the Oscars don't really go for independent films when it comes to acting wins. When you have a
No.
studio as big as them behind you, well then,
No.
look at where that leads you.
No. Especially, I mean, if you had someone from Lord of the Rings nominated, I mean, I'm trying to mix it, but of course you have to mix it always. But I mean, Lord of the Rings was not nominated for any acting categories, and the only chance that she would actually have was Cate Blanchett, and she wasn't
She wasn't in
exactly for a
it,
long
yeah.
time. She wasn't for a long time. So you had this big name, you had Renee Zellweger, this big production, that's it. You don't have anyone else. It was like, imagine her losing again. The year before that, she lost against Nicole Kidman, and now losing with Nicole Kidman in the movie. It was like, no, that's it. And I think, I mean, she was expecting it, no, but back in the day, and still now, of course, with what her facial expressions still allow her because of Botox and anything, but it's like she's always have this face like,
Did you
I
read the
read.
anonymous ballot that said Nicole Kidman being the Ricardos doesn't emote too much Botox? What is
Somehow,
happening with those voters?
I don't know. It's like I'm getting a little bit scared out of the things that you get to read, and then you translated them to the jokes at the Oscars. Like it was Amy Schumer, the one that said that admired Aaron Sorkin for making a movie of Lucille Ball without any jokes in it.
Which is not
But
wrong.
still, it's like back in the day, no, back in the day with both of them, it was like Zellweger, Nicole Kidman, and well, if you get today nowadays. The similarities. Who would have actually thought that Renee Zellweger would have two Oscars and Nicole Kidman only one? But still, but out of it, it's like who could have imagined that Renee Zellweger would have the same facial, non-facial expressions as Nicole Kidman because of surgeries and Botox? And at the same time, it's like she still, when she won for Call Mancha, she had this weird expression that is like, I'm not expecting it, but I'm expecting it. So it's like she was expecting it. It was her moment. You like it or not, we can all go on Twitter saying, "Oh, this one was robbed or not." Renee Zellweger needed an Oscar. I just think it deserved it. Needed an Oscar. She was trying, trying, trying. That's it.
Yeah. Just funny to me how the early 2000s leading star had to go supporting to win her first Oscar. And it's good that Renee Zellweger does have a leading actress Oscar, once again in a fairly, I want to say weak, but open field. So yeah, it's just funny how that's lined up for her, especially after taking years off acting.
Yes, she took 6, 7 years. I don't remember exactly, and now she's coming back. She tries to get an Emmy out of that Tammy Faye movie. Tammy Faye. Well, she's having her Tammy Faye moment. Judy was her first Tammy Faye moment, and now with, well, not her Tammy Faye, she's having her Jared Leto in a fat suit moment with that TV miniseries she's doing. It's like she has such a weird career, right? Because you could say she won an Oscar maybe for a role that you could say, I don't know. I've read so many divisive things about if she lost. I mean, if it was okay that she lost for Chicago or not, blah blah blah. But it's like, I mean, she won her first Oscar for An Unforgettable Gala, which makes you believe that Unforgettable Gala was a great director for supporting Academy Award-winning performances with Juliette Binoche also. So it's like, okay, if you think about how she won for this movie with this big director, but it's like then her career, it's like, what? And then she won for Judy. It's like a strange case of an actress that wins for wrong roles or weak movies, but with big directors or big names. Because Judy, about Judy Garland, it's like it's the kind of movie and performances that you get nothing out of it, but at the same time, it's like you try to understand there's something you need to talk about it, and then you're like, no, I don't.
Yeah, it's that thing with just Hollywood and the Oscars and how they line up when sometimes you take a step back and you're like, huh, that actor has two Oscars. Like, I wonder how that worked out for them. I mean, not to go on a tangent, but another example that always comes to my mind is Hilary Swank. I'm always like, oh, yeah, that's
Oh.
right. She won two Oscars in like 5 years and leading actress Oscars. It's not a hard, it's not an easy task. But should we
I'm not
move on
happy.
to everyone's favorite movie of the Lord of the Rings?
Oh, but not our case. Yes, because
Yeah.
I think we talk about a lot about Coal Mountain. That again, it's a movie about nothing. That pretends to be a movie about a lot of things and ends up being a movie about nothing. Just Jude Law trying to be handsome and failing miserably.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so, okay, Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King doesn't need too much introduction. The third in the trilogy, it's the one that won 11 Academy Awards. They're still on the way to Mount Doom, and they're still fighting Sauron's army. I think that's just like, I know we're both in minority on this. Not saying we hate it, but I will say while I'm not a super fan by any means, I actually did like all three of them when I watched them for the first time as a teenager. But going back and revisiting all of them, I've realized I have moved past that. So you mentioned that Lord of the Rings is only good on a technical level.
Yes, I mean, I do applaud as a technical effort, and I think it's amazing. And I also do love what's the name of the actor that plays Gollum? It's on the circus.
Any
It's the
circus, yeah.
actor from thir Yes, it's the actor from 13 Going on 30. And I remember back in the day, I'm telling you, like 5 years ago, people were always saying, and I think it was the main discussion when the discussion started about how this type of actors that you don't see them face, but they're still acting, that they needed to be recognized because he's not a stunt, and at the same time, yeah, of course he's not. It's like if he was playing Gollum without a green screen and anything, he was playing it with a costume or something, the Oscars would make more attention. Yes, I think what he does is impressive. His body language is amazing. So I do think we are all, I mean, at my senses, like we're only seeing it as a technical level, but also if you talk about that acting. The thing is that it's not my type of movie, but I do understand why the Oscars like it. But just it doesn't work for me as a movie that I would say, oh, it has this, because I always try to see it again as from an acting perspective. Something that the first movie does have, unless you get it because Ian McKellen was nominated for playing
Sure, yeah.
Gandalf in the first movie, but not in this one. I mean, of course, you understand he's not that much in here, but it's like you do understand him and also his connection with Ian Holm, Bilbo. It's very sweet, tender, and you understand so many things. But it's like you come to the second part, And I do say it's a spectacular what Jackson and his whole team does. But there's something, and also it won. I mean, it won all of the nominations they were up for, but adapted screenplay. It's like too much love for me. Way too much love.
Yeah. So this is my take, but I'm sort of afraid of commitment to characters in the fantasy genre. And that's a huge part of this last one, the emotional stakes that come with all these flurry and set of characters that we've all get to know after 9 hours. But by the time you've reached the final movie, if you're not entirely there, you get really tired of it really quickly. And yes, it's absolutely a technically impressive film, even if a little bit of the green screen is hilarious. But like you said, the first one is one that I can get behind a little easier. Whereas the second is like a huge battle film. And I like those moments. I like when it draws into battle like it does in Return of the King. The 11 nomination sweep, 11 win sweep is definitely generous. I will say it's
Way too.
interesting that no acting nominations, because you can't really find a spot for one, but also no cinematography nomination. It just swept all
That's
11.
also. That's also what I was thinking because they get. I had to come back to it because I'm always like seeing the scripts, but they get adapted screenplay nomination and win, and not cinematography. It's like I do not understand. That feels like yes, they do applaud them at a technical level. They do not applaud them at an action level. Of course, it's too much fighting. And also, I mean, if you see the trailers, just to see, okay, where they try to focus, you see this battle, oh, battle, bells, and Dan Gollum saying, ah, my precious, or whatever. But you don't get to see anything else, so that's the message it gets you. It's a Marvel type of movie, and I'm insulting Lord of the Rings, but I don't care about insulting Peter Jackson. But yes, it's the type of movie that would you get the best moments. Of course, they're gonna have great moments. Because they have spectacular type of scenes. But do they have a message? Do they have something that I could emphasize with a character? Empathize? No, I don't. So I do not. I mean, as you were saying, I could understand so much a cinematography nomination rather than an adapted screenplay. I haven't seen the script, I haven't read it, but I do believe they barely have. Something that this year people were praising about the Power of the Dog were like not only the scenes, you know, the talking scenes, but all the dialogues. They were talking about the description of the scenes. And I bet that if you read the Lord of the Rings, this specific script, they're gonna have so many description of the scenes because it's what you need in order to make them. But I do not have them as a dialogue.
Sure.
So it's like
Especially with the
I'm
battle
not understanding.
scenes, it almost becomes like choreography. I For me, the 11 wins is, even though it is a fairly weak year for film, 11 wins seems like a makeup for the whole trilogy. It's the final one. We're just going to go all out for it. It's a lazy choice, but it's also like an easy choice. It was what I feared with June this year. And what people are saying with the other parts of June, will it become a Lord of the Rings situation where it's like, okay, the final film, and it goes out with a bang. Let's just give it everything. But when you watch this film, you're really reaching for the 11 wins, in my opinion, as opposed to when you watch something like Titanic, when it's quite evident that all of the components are worthy of an Oscar win in any year. And I'm surprised Titanic isn't the actual record holder and won, I don't know, makeup or something. We could have got 12, but that would have been, a lot anyway. But yeah,
And
to
also
this
was
film.
saying, because I didn't remember that Coman Changadev cinematography, and they went for Master and Commander.
Oof, I do not like that
I try
movie.
not to remember. I hate it. But it's like the ones that, of course, Lord of the Rings wasn't nominated, the one that won was Master and Commander. I don't understand the Oscars. I know it's because big production or anything. I'm Master and Commander was from which studio? I don't remember. Oh, well, Miramax. That I already get it. I get everything out of it. But it's like, and also in Best Adapted Screenplay, City of God was nominated. And I think that script was, wow, really, especially for me as a Latin person, and of course I'm near Brazil and anything, it was like a very tough one to read and to watch the movie. And then you give it to this one that I do, again, I do applaud it as a technical level. That's the same thing I do with Dune and with Mad Max Fury Road. But it's like, it's the kind of movie that, of course, you're gonna have something because the production is spectacular. But again, do I get it as a message? No. So it's like, again, I'm yes, it's pretty generous for me.
I think that this Academy Awards, the ceremony is available in full on YouTube. If anyone wants to experience what it's like when 11 film, sorry, a film wins 11 Oscars in one night. For me, I get fatigued when anyone wins more than six in recent years. So it's definitely an achievement. And of course, when you win that many, Best Picture was just around the corner. But my winner for that year in Best Picture, and I
Lost in
think yours as
translation.
well, is Lost in Translation, Sofia Coppola's directorial, no, what am I talking about? Virgin Suicides, forgot about that.
Yes.
One of her early films, let's just say that. I love this film. You don't understand, Valentina.
Yes, but what keeps you is like that's a huge difference between a huge movie, great magic production and anything, and of course Harvey Weinstein on the back, because I have a very bad story. Probably that's why I hate, well, I wouldn't say hate, but I'm not a passionate about Lord of the Rings because of the story behind Peter Jackson trying desperately to win an Oscar and giving the back to Mira Sorvino. But also makes you see the difference how in the same year you have this big production, at the same time you have Lost in Translation. That is a powerful movie just because of two things, the acting and mostly Bill Murray and the script. Very simple, very real. You don't need huge scenes, right? And just keeping it real and human. And how, okay, you have these two things, and for someone maybe out of a different context, so many people prefer it Lost in Translation.
But you mentioned hot takes before. This isn't really a hot take, it's more like a lukewarm take.
Always.
But
I'm always.
mine is that Lost in Translation is the best film to lose Best Picture in this century. If I think too much about it, I might change my mind, but I'm not. I'm just going to stand firmly with that as of now, because it is an intimate, character-driven movie that is just full of feeling. It exists on such a small scale. It makes me long for a trip once again. I haven't left this country in years. And not saying you need to have these connections when you're overseas with these strangers in a hotel, but it
With a
does.
60-year-old, 50-year-old, that
A
it's
faded
like
actor.
a fail actor, and you're like between your 20s and not knowing what to do with your life. And I always remember when she calls, I don't remember Bill Murray's name character. It's like, I remember the actors at this moment. Bob, and he tells her, I don't know where I'm supposed to be, and he says, you'll figure it out. And it's like, wow, I really need to make a trip to someone to tell me that.
Don't you think it just like captures the magic of travel though, even if you don't have these connections with people and like unfamiliar international lands? But sorry, just to get into the movie, I moved past it. It basically follows a faded movie star and a neglected young woman who form an unlikely bond after crossing paths in Tokyo. It stars Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson, Bob and Charlotte, okay? But I mentioned that Charlotte is a neglected young woman, mainly from her newlywed husband who's kind of an asshole. I mean, he says he loves her, but he pays no
He's a
attention.
total asshole.
Yeah, pays no attention to her. Also gives this, I guess, this woman he had a fling with, played by Anna Faris,
I
a lot more attention in the lobby when they meet. When you give it the attention and give it the patience, it really comes to life.
Yes, because it's also, as you were saying first, it's a very character-driven movie. So it's like everything moves because of how they react. And again, if I'm telling you, I do remember when Charlotte calls Bob and asks, I don't know what to do. And he says, you'll figure it out. It's like, it's not a huge dialogue revealing thing. It's just him being human out of his experience. And also that connection between someone who is a grown-up, a mature person, and has seen the world, and from her who's discovering, but at the same time, how this trip, I think it's something that it always happens. You're doing trips and just revelations flow. I'm being very relaxed at the moment. It sounds like I'm being out of a yoga class, but it's the truth. It's like it's what happens, and it's the magic out of the script. So it's like how it's amazing. It's simple. I can say simple, but it happens. And I'm touching a hot subject again because Spike Jonze was. I think at this time he was dating Sofia Coppola. I know they dated, but what he did with her, it's a simple movie, character driven, and still it's amazing what you get out of it. And here the same thing. It's like I get so much more things out of this script, out of the characters, even though if I do not feel like my life is like Bill Murray's character. Or Scarlett Johansson or her husband. It's like, but you see things out of relationships. Something that, of course, I do not see it with Lord of the Rings. And definitely, I don't see it in Cold Mountain Chain between Jude Law and Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my favorite part about this film, especially through the dialogue, is how light the film is on catharsis. It's very true to life when it comes to relationships. And there's this sadness that comes through with Bob and Charlotte. Not saying that's my favorite part that they're sad, but these moments that they have, like the phone call that Charlotte has when she's just visited a shrine and she's saying, I didn't feel anything. In also known as my marriage is not working, but
Yes.
the person on the other line just doesn't hear her and then says gotta go. Or when Bob is talking to his a wife about burgundy carpet and she hangs up on him as he's about to say I love you. There's just this open-ended like sadness and like meditative I don't know, just open-ended threads that come with the characters, and it makes the film so much more compelling to watch. It's these tiny moments. And this is set in Tokyo, one of the busiest and most populated cities in the world. But Coppola draws this into like a small and tight-knit drama where it could have easily been like a pill of overstimulation. Think about films like Enter the Void or, I don't know, like a neon-driven story or something that's like Vice-y. But it's not like this at all. And the connection happens in hotel lounges, in elevators, in a random karaoke bar on like the 15th floor of some building. You don't really see Tokyo in large scale.
Yeah, she also sees from that perspective, from the perspective that you see when you're doing a trip with a certain objective, and at the same time when you're not happy because you see them, both of them. It's like when you start meeting Bob, and everyone was like, he's this failed actor. When he mentions that he is earning a lot of money out of this, but at the same time he's not enjoying it. So that's, I think, that's what you're getting from seeing from Tokyo. You're in this huge city, one of the busiest in the world, at the same time one of the biggest economically speaking. I mean, back at that time and also now, it's the kind of city that, depending what you do with your life, if you're there, you're like, oh my God, this is huge. But at the same time, when you get in there and you have another purposes in life, it's like, am I really enjoying it? No. And I also read that apparently, Coppola I mean, of course, Sofia Coppola is like a major star, rich person that if she wanted back in her early 20s to travel around the world, she would just do it. Something that for normal people would never happen.
I think the characters in this film are in their heads, so they have a really myopic view of the city. And even though in the final scene it's Bob and Charlotte, and there's 100 people in between, all he sees is her. So it's how we really zero in on people that we have a connection for. Maybe things around become blurry. Maybe people do. It's a similar thing with the whisper. People always want to know what he's whispering in her ear. But my thing is, does it really matter? I like the ambiguity of not entirely understanding what he's saying, even though you can look it up. But I haven't. I still don't know what he whispers. And I actually watched a subtitled version that didn't say anything. So I was like, thank you.
It's not what he's saying, it's what he's doing for saying it in a way. It's like, and what you were saying about the platonic thing, it's like when they first met, even before when they met, when you're seeing about both of them, he doesn't need a relationship. He doesn't need a new relationship. And you see it from the first interaction when the woman gets in his room and he doesn't know what to do, and she's like, the lip,
Yeah,
and
I
he's like,
forgot about that. The
I love that
stockings,
scene.
yeah.
Yes, because you see him how he's not reacting because it's not what he needs at this moment. He needs something else, a friendship, someone that makes him, or someone that actually makes him rediscovering himself as a person. And she needs the exact same thing. I mean, Charlotte needs the exact same thing. She's in the middle of a relationship. She doesn't need one. It's like what in Spanish you would say, you don't get one thing out of the other. It's like if you have this problem, you're not gonna fix it by getting another problem. It's the same thing in here. And they're not a problem because it's like the story of two lonely persons. I remember once reading someone saying, it's two lonely people, two lonely person that just met each other, and it's like they try to get why they hate being lonely on why just being around so many people they're still feeling lonely. What do we have to change? And I think that also it's like the paradox out of the fact of being in Tokyo, such a busy city, like you could say New York, but at the same time it's like I'm not understanding anything.
And even if you wanted to look at it as the sort of downfalls of fame, you could as well, because his fame follows him everywhere in Japan. Whereas when someone would approach him, in my mind, I'm like, oh, they're approaching Bill Murray because he's famous. No, because they're approaching Bob, this veteran actor who is now destined for rum ads or. But
Commercials of whiskey.
whiskey commercials. And then he has that talk show appearance or the game show appearance near the end, which is actually hysterical and also very true to how Japanese TV is. But I like when the lost in translation element actually comes in play, like when you have the woman who's translating the direction for the Suntory rum or Suntory whiskey, and
Yes.
there's a lot of things that she's evidently leaving out.
Because it's very simple, the dialogues. And I do not think that the script is great or bad, just measured about how long or how short the dialogues are, but also how much liberty you give to your actors. And if you are doing this kind of movie, Lost in Translation, that you need your actors to act and to feel the connection with the other one, because it's a very personal. I mean, you have, yes, you do have so many actors. I mean, not so many, but very small ones. But in the end, the only ones that you actually need are Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson. So I really need that to them to feel safe in a safe place. And you get that when you give them liberty to improvise and to feel the connection with the other one. Also because of the age difference. I mean, I never understand with Scarlett Johansson. It's like she's not even in her 40s and this movie has almost 20 years and she's playing this 20 something, but she was
Very
like
young.
19, 18 years old.
Very young. She
It's
20 2003 was also like a 2019 year for her. In that Go with a Pearl Earring and this film were like her big entries into awards, but they obviously didn't eventuate. And she had to wait till 2019 to get the double nominations in
Nomination.
the same year. I mean, I think Scarlett Johansson would be worthy of a supporting actress nomination, which is category fraud, I know, but it there's nothing there's something about her performance that doesn't feel very leading. Maybe it's just because it is so gentle and
Yes, and also because Bill Murray is like, he's driving the movie starts because of him, and also when you get to know him, it's just because of him, his career and anything. And with Scarlett's character, why she's there is because of her husband. So I mean, it's like if you make that connection, it's like he's the main character, and yeah, she's the one that appears. Probably like not like a supporting role like Giovanni Ribisi that plays her husband, but still it's like in the medium between being a leading and a supporting. I don't know how she was campaigning. I bet she was campaigning leading actress.
BAFTAs were actually quite generous with awarding this film. They gave it even best editing, which I find interesting. No, she won best actress in the leading role at the
She
BAFTAs.
won.
And so did Bill Murray. I mean,
Wow.
I think that
Oh, wow, yeah.
from the four nominations
Surprise.
that Lost in Translation received at the Oscars, I would give it every single one of them. That's just my ultimate. Sofia Coppola can be the first female director to win.
Female director. And she was like very young. She wasn't like 32, 33. She was pretty young.
Well, I always think, she's as old as the Godfather because that's her in the baptism scene. So she's born
Yes.
71, 72.
71. Yes, 71, I guess. No, but
She's almost
I'm
50
checking
years.
the nominations. I adore the fact that Scarlett Johansson won lead actress at the BAFTA because I really thought she won the Rising Star one. I don't know why. And also they got the César for best foreign language film.
Oh, I could
But
say this being
see.
something the French would love.
Yes. It's very European at the same time. It has this thing. I mean if you change the yes, if you ch change the location to France, it wouldn't actually work because France is a very fancy thing. You need this kind of busy and at the same time like overly produced city like Tokyo. It is like very, I would say like robotic because it's super robotic. I actually see the movie and I see it nowadays as it hasn't changed. It's very futurist back in the day and back now that we're like everything is very technological. But I'm actually seeing also Johansson was nominated for a Critics' Choice as supporting actress. It's the same thing that actually happens nowadays that Oscars don't know what to
What
do.
to
It's
where to
like they
put
put
them,
some
yeah. Katrina
but put
Balfe.
down.
That's my theory.
I'm still like
Can't get into it
you
today.
haven't
I'm gonna
recovered.
lose
No,
my mind.
you haven't recovered from the Oscars and I haven't recovered from that.
Haven't
And
recovered from
I
the
do not.
nominations, the season, the
No.
ceremony. I'm still
It
in.
was so long. It was so long that it's like you just can't let it go. It's like we were desperately saying, please end it. Please, I need the fights and everything to stop. And now it's like, but I still need to talk about it. But coming back to Scarlett Johansson, as I was saying, this happens the same thing. It's like they campaigning. And maybe, who knows? Maybe now that you were saying that you touched my biggest hot topic of the season with Katrina Balfe, maybe Scarlett Johansson was actually voted both in leading and supporting.
Oh, here's a good example. So this is what I meant from Johansson being in supporting. You know how Anthony Hopkins is only in the Silence of the Lambs for like 11 minutes? But he's a leading actor because he has so much like power and strength in that film.
Yes.
You just think that he's in there for longer. Whereas I would have no idea how long Scarlett Johansson was in Lost in Translation for. No idea what her screen time is.
No.
And that's not to diminish her performance, but it feels like such a passerby performance, if you will. And they both do, and I think that's the point. It feels almost like like in some ways like an extra and not like the main character. But that's a compliment.
Yes.
That's not me dissing the performance. And that goes to the vibe that the film gives off. Like in the hotel lounge, you eye her from across the room when she's at the dinner party with her crappy husband in Anna Faris's
Yeah.
character, whatever her name is. And you can just tell that you can tell how miserable she is, but you can also tell how she gets sort of drowned by her surroundings. And that's why the best scenes in the film, it's when it's just Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson, like on the bed, the famous shot outside that bar when she's wearing the pink wig, which I mean, I just love that shot. I mean, it is a beautiful film. I would have nominated it for
For
cinematography.
cinematography, I'm surprised that it was nominated
And it's
because
shot
the
on
colors.
film as well, which Sofia Coppola was very adamant about, even though her dad said shoot in digital because it's the way of the future.
But also, what happens to me is that I do not know what are the demands of academics, but it's like probably they watch a movie, this major movie, and they feel, okay, this is a movie that needs to win Best Picture because it has everything with Lord of the Rings. And then they watch this movie, and I think that they could actually be like, it's a great movie. But does it have everything to be recognized as the best picture of the year? Because I think that they believe that if give the award to this kind of movie, it won't be like it would lose respect for the Oscars. Like if we have any respect of the Oscars at
To
all or
begin with,
credibility.
yeah,
But
that is.
yeah, but that. And then they'll give it a consolation prize with the original screenplay. Because it also feels out of when I try to investigate or do some research out of original mostly in original screenplays, like where do we put the consolation prize? Here, in original screenplay. It's original, the best part is the screenplay, that's it, that's your prize, go home. And you get like years passes by and you're like, but it was a very good film, right? I mean, and then we come what's nowadays happening with the box office and people saying we need to give Oscars to Marvel. And then you have, I remember, I guess it was Matt Neglia, a tweet of him, someone saying, that's what the money is for. That's what the money is. I mean, you have this great box office movies. Why do they need an Oscar if they already have this popularity? Same thing with Lord of the Rings. You already have popularity. I want an Oscar, I want a ceremony that actually give awards to movies that I do have something else, not only at a technological or technical level. And then you have Lost in Translation. I think it's like the best example out of it.
Yeah. And on that note, did Cold Mountain deserve a Best Picture nomination? No, absolutely not.
Oh
Even
God. No.
if it is not the most exciting year, for me it's like, okay, Lord of the
No.
Rings, the big time winner, Lost in Translation, and everything else.
Maybe if we get generous as this year, or well, the years back in the day with 9, 10, yeah, Cold Mountain would be like number 6, I guess, maybe number 7.
Thank you for joining me again for this 2003 trio. Where can people find your work, Valentina?
Well, first of all, I'm also thankful to be once again, especially with hot takes, like I can say, and you can find me on Twitter. I'm Starco, like Star CO Bishan, like WandaVision, Starco Bishan. And I'm also, well, in my Twitter account, I have my letterbox that it's B Starkovich, of course, my last name. So you can find me there. And I also plan to continue now that award season is over, till can, of course. I'm trying to continue with my project of doing a watch and a rewatch for the original screenplay category. So we'll see what we're getting.
All right. Well, I look forward to that. And thank you for listening to today's episode. We'll be back in a fortnight. Thank you and see you then, everyone.